Winter in America, again, is the anthology that we're celebrating tonight. Many poets, about 16 of us, who are in this anthology, edited by Paul Nelson, Katie Sarah Zales, and then there were six other editors, which I am one. There are eight co-editors total. And three of the editors are here, a bunch of poets. So we're really excited. Katie will start the show in just a moment, but I just want to say that if you were hoping for it, Pablo will start the show, and I'll stop the talking in just a second. I just wanted to say that we're getting started. So thank you for coming.
So is the last poet we were waiting already here?
What poem?
The last poet we were coming. Who was lost?
So. Okay.
There she is. Well, thank you all for coming. My name is Pablo Valer, and I'm so happy to have you all here to present here at Cal State today this book, Winter in America, again. And before anything, I should mention that I'm a big fan of Paul Nelson, and among of you who already know him know what I'm talking about. So I'm really ecstatic to have Paul, Roxy, and all of the editors and the poets here to present the anthology. I also want to thank the centers that made this event possible, the Center for Contemporary Arts and Poetics, the American Communities Program, ASI, our student government organization, and of course, AWP, that brought you here. I don't write poetry, I write prose, so as a prose writer, I know the golden rule, which is when there are poets around, you just shut up and let them do the talking. So that's what I'm going to do. But let me just say a few words, because Paul and I, we are both fans of short form writing, like Ginsberg's American Sentences or Ramón Gómez de la Serna's Greguerías. And there is another famous poet who also has this tendency to write in very short format. It's Nicanor Parra. I'm sure you know the famous Chilean poet Nicanor Parra. He wrote in what he called the artifacts. And there is one artifact in particular that he wrote. This was in the 70s. That speaks to us in this our current predicament. The artifact says, "USA, where liberty is a statue." And Parra was not just a poet. He was also a physicist. He taught here in the U.S. physics. He was an ecologist, so his poetry transcends the localized political critique and tries to explore the deeper folds of the way we interact with each other, the way we interact with nature, the way it's maybe more to the point of today's presentation, the way the state interacts with the individual. If there is one lesson that Parra left us, is that we should avoid this knee-jerk reaction that we have to think in terms of hierarchical master-slave relationships. So that would have been his response to authoritarianism in general, and maybe even to the 2024 election. And I'm really looking forward to listening to your responses, and as I promised, my response is to shut up and let you do the talking. Thank you. And I pass it on to Katie. Thank you, Katie.
Thank you all for coming. I can't see any of you.
You want the lights on?
Yeah.
Can we get the lights on?
I'm going to just read a little bit from the preface to give a context for this book. For this anthology, we asked poets and artists to respond to their feelings about the election, to reflect deeper than conscious anger, keeping in mind the words of Sam Hamill, in his introduction to Poems Against the War. That was an anthology, if you're not aware, that he published in response to George W. Bush's war on Iraq in 2003. He said, "These are the voices of our poets. They come from every segment of society. They also celebrate our country by expounding a compassionate view of the universe. A government is a government of words, and when those words are used to mislead, to instill fear, or to invite silence, it is the duty of every poet to speak fearlessly and clearly." The poems in this anthology address frightening human acts, the destruction of the environment, the unbridled use of power, the perverse narrative in this country that black lives do not matter, patriarchy, reproductive injustice for women, silent support for the U.S. industrial complex, and the lack of compassion for diverse gender identity, immigrants, and unsheltered populations. These poems are rooted in the belief that the incoming administration at the time, incoming administration will not relieve nor heal us from our nation's past. They take the reader from a boiling brew to a slow simmer to a new awakening. In this collection, incarcerated poet Quanetta Harris, this is somebody that I write, she's in Texas prison. She wrote, "From my cell, I see you, reading these words and wondering how we let fear work so well that we became what we feared most." Kay Bell speaks for women still seeking their voice and power, quote, "I've been this woman in this apple-shaped body with this coiled wool hair slipping into a raging red moon at midnight where my vision is the flesh of freedom, a place where I do not have to be obedient." Rodrigo Toscano assures that an anarcho-tyranny figure will not prevail. A camaraderie of men, the Männerbund, I hope I'm saying that right, will now rewrite labor laws that integrate Canadian, American, and Mexican biopower around a vision of itself. Sherry Brown suggests, "Let's go to the great American site of equality in the Waffle House where we are all equal, okay to be queer." Echoing Brown, M.A. Nicholson presents a narrator rejected for her, their gender identity. Quote, "Billboards represent, billboards presenting overblown images of very young women, smooth white skin, blonde dresses, arguing for their rights, for plural marriage, and I will be turned away from the hotel where I made reservations, redirected to stay elsewhere." Catalina Marie Cantu, reminiscence, "My immigrant ancestors knit, crocheted, and sewed their worries into garments I wore from the time I was born." Martina Spada reminds us of the separation of parent and child in Tornillo, Texas, in 2018-19, Anna Odessa Linzer connects with nature, which may be the foremost challenge the human species faces at this time, as she engages the red-breasted sapsucker. Quote, "We find each other eye to eye. How did we find each other here, in this treeless, cold place, yet cannot save each other?" And Anne Graham Walker implores, "Bring empathy, bring poems wherever you are called to go to serve these times." words are the main tool of poets in the beginning, it is not the word. It is listening. It is reflection. A poet's practice is to reflect deeper than the conscious awareness of anger and to cast that awareness beyond the self. A poet, a noiseless patient spider, to borrow the words of Whitman, uses language to explore a sense of connectedness with others and the natural world. A poet, quote, launches forth filament out of itself, ceaselessly musing, venturing, throwing, seeking the spheres to connect them, till the bridge they need be formed, till the gossamer thread catch somewhere. Thank you. And next, please welcome Paul Nelson.
What a joy it is to be here. Oh, I see what you mean about the light. Yes, it's intense. Pablo, thanks for having us here. Thanks for arranging this. I'm very grateful for you and for what you do here for our friendship. Ronald Johnson wrote a poem called Ark, a long poem, and in it, he's got this phrase called a lineaged clarity. And when you see a book title like Winter in America Again, some of you may recognize the name Gil Scott-Heron, who in 1974 had Winter in America. So definitely a nod to Gil Scott-Heron and his ongoing resistance to the very beginnings of neoliberalism. Man, if we'd only known that then, and I guess some people did. We hope that the poets are tapping into the prophetic, which is why we wanted to go somewhere deeper than anger. Get a chance to get into the prophetic and to some of the vision aspect. What can be in place of what we have now? And I think Rodrigo, who will be our first reader tonight, will do exactly that. The other thing about a lineaged clarity is to see that the parenthesis is not closed on that. And that was a little tactic of Charles Olson, who had this idea that he was starting a sort of sidebar, and then the sidebar kind of took over. In Maximus' poems, there's a line, you go all around the subject. And then he says, I didn't know there was a subject. What is the subject here? It's resistance, it's shock to what happened in November. Katie Sarah Zale called me the day after the election, and she's like, oh my God, what are we gonna do? She said, I thought about what Sam Hamill would do. He created that anthology. There was more than 20,000 poems that were against what the Bush administration was planning in Iraq, and we see how that turned out. She said Sam would create an anthology, and so she said, let's do it. And I said, yes, and let's get it out before the 20th, or at least on the 20th. And we did it, and it was hard as hell. And working with 8 editors is not recommended, but we somehow managed. And I want to tell you that the discussions during this time were so instructive that it was an incredibly beautiful experience. And so we're planning to recreate this by continuing with this series and calling the next book Winter in America Still, and give ourselves some time to work on this, but have it out in time for the midterms, which seem far away, but they're coming next year. And there needs to be a way to stop what's going on now. I don't want to get into specifics, but everybody has, I'm sure, a long list of their own. It's also important for the poet to witness and to begin to write down what's happening. Because in 10, 15, 20 years, people aren't going to believe what we live through if there is going to be a United States of America after this. So I'm grateful you're here tonight. I'm grateful to be part of this work, grateful to work with all our co-editors and our beautiful contributors to this book. And so I'll bring up a force of nature to kick the evening off. Please welcome Roxy Power. Roxy.
I actually just want to get this party started, so I'm just going to go fast here. Guys, thank you for coming. Rodrigo's getting ready to read for us. It was a pleasure to work with Paul and Katie. There are 8 of us, so you can imagine that the stylistic conversations were interesting. So the diversity of style, region, poetics, politics, is diverse. The call emphasized compassion, as Paul said, over angry screeds. I don't know if you need anger. We're not going to give it to you tonight, but I'm grateful for the continuation of basically common unity through these readings. We've had, I don't know, six so far. I've organized 8 readings. We're having 2 in Santa Cruz on the 1st and the 15th, and on Lit Balm, which is online on April 26th and 27th. Tell your friends, really cool people. Again, Rodrigo will be reading along with Mark Nowak, Paul Nelson, Matthew Cooperman, Abby Copain, Petra Cuppers, Fred Waugh, others. So for tonight, because we have 16 readers, some of whom are probably still trying to find their way here, we'll just probably forego the complicated introductions. We hope you'll buy the book outside. You'll find out more about the poets by reading their bios in the back. The poets can just say something if they want to, like, hey, I'm Elizabeth Robinson and I'm from the East Bay. So just to kind of get a sense of where we're all from. So that's pretty much what we're going to do. I also wanted to say thank you to this kind of remarkable knot of poetic resistance that all of you represent. Years of contributions to a variety of poetic cultures across the country are here tonight. And I know that we're revisiting a somewhat traumatic moment, but in general, we have experienced this as joyous resistance. And so thank you for coming and being a part of that. And without further ado, the very awesome New Orleansian poet, Rodrigo Toscano, will open this evening. Rodrigo.
Write 100 sonnets in 100 days. I'm at number 92, and so within a week or so, hopefully this will be done. It's been backbreaking. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read 3 of those short sonnets, and then I'm going to read the piece that was in the anthology. So that's about 5 minutes of work. This first one is called, the sonnet's called New Stance. Quiet punches in the gut, quiet pain, quiet soothing from intimates, or worse, no soothing from no one, an added punch, quietly endured, straight from the rule book. You could make this place plenty socialist, but that's against the prime directive, so make of it what you can. Perhaps Purdy, straight from the rule book, elementally, the magic of half quiet from the gut and out the butt. Sorry for the crudeness. Sorry for the lack of decorative poise. Sorry for the gong of the working class. Sorry, but not really, for the new stance, like a Scott Joplin rag when you need it. Imperium 2. But English itself was losing power while reclaiming dominion over us. So everything went from weird to weirder as declamation became all the rage. Just as level red cosplaying took hold, everyone an expert, an ethics crank, a shoeless pilgrim trudging up a hill, a healer, a shrink, slag heaps of counsel in English against itself, there to help. But it was bestial bards who turned it down as pillars of jargon came crashing down there among the broken copes of statecraft, a sort of salvage poetics sprung forth, one that functionaries couldn't quite quash. Salvage Nation. Like a J.S. Bach fugue when you need it, the comrade's power for staying quiet in the face of grandiose fabrications, calumny of despoiling the people, the alleged mandate, only increased until the moment to speak like thunder to the matter at hand. Who gets to thrive? And never swerving from that, but instead weaving in lines of cause and consequence, point by point, on top of points, harmonic, conceiving transitions for what's to do, tying up loose ends, leaving behind clues, paths to even higher resolution in the forging of the salvage nation. And this is the piece from the anthology. It's called Männerbunde. Männerbunde is a German word. It means like men's club, basically. I guess these days you call it the sort of just gonna launch it. That's what that word refers to. So Männerbunde. Guns, shedfuls of them, you'll see, will not be the deciding factor in the big shift towards hemispheric autarky. No amount of rounds and clips hoarded in safes will rewrite the labor laws that integrate Canadian, American, and Mexican biopower around a vision of itself, protective economically, expansive culturally, interposed maps of watersheds, routes of produce, conduits of clean energy, lasered in on healthy work and stable housing. The big shift doesn't require belly-crawling sharpshooters, grown-up boy camps, Männerbunde, sing-alongs, pining after dreams of becoming sovereign, when all's entangled already, except not formally and equitably, set to a higher order, resource-conscious, confident future, commandeering hemispheres, collective wealth, material and psychic, brave projection, bulwark against this anarcho-tyranny, faux nationalism, yacht excursion for winners of rigged outcomes, swamp monsters becoming great again, promoting shedfuls of ammo, camo, grown-up boy, lingerie, boudoir, Männerbunde, posing on towering trucks, performing sovereign, when all's entangled already, but on a wobbly base, with sideshows, gun shows, crouching, cowering, last gasps of sovereign kings, every man a serf owning nothing, not mineral deposit, not beds of technology, not downstream planning, educational cargo, material and psychic, oblivious to rising forces, integrated, a target, prosperous homelands to thrive in, where crotch-grasping, gun-toting, enfeebled copes flicker out year by year as hemispheric power looks outward with straight backs towards other autarkic regions, working on integration of a higher order, looking outwards, mindfully negotiating globes, collective wealth, material, and psychic. And yeah, a few museums of nation states and even kinky cosplay might be entertaining on occasion to remind us of the age of anarcho-tyranny and its camo, lingerie, butlers on a leash, Männerbunde.
And next up is Dan Servine from Santa Cruz. Give it up for Dan.
Good evening. Yeah, I'm from the Rock City Santa Cruz crew, just up the ways. And I'm going to read the three short prose poems in the book. And it's from a series called The Democratic Dreams of Animals and Gods, kind of relating what we see in the sentient world and in myth with what might be going on right now. First one is, where are our grandmothers? Pods of orcas look to young females to lead them. Navigating vast seas, hunting for food, they communicate via echolocation. Whistles, clicks, pulsed calls, low-frequency pops, jaw claps. Matrilineal, sociable, their sophisticated hunting techniques and vocalizations are passed across generations in language all their own. Unique sounds that resemble moans, trills, squeaks, creaking doors buried in wavelength and volume even pattern. But when food is scarce, the whales turn to older females to lead the clans. It takes generations to know enough to survive a changing world, a mother to understand what is at stake, a grandmother when you've completely lost your way. And the next one is called Alpha Males, taken from Franz de Waal's studies of these sentient creatures. Alpha males. Although chimpanzees have a reputation for violence, alpha males in the wild, relying too heavily on brute force, risk being deposed, even killed by their followers. Instead, says primatologist Franz de Waal, an able ape leader spends a lot of time literally grooming allies. This sounds democratic to me, Franz muses, shirt in need of ironing, hair askew. It takes a village to raise a leader and to keep one in line. And then finally, the dance of politics. This is a little, I'm not sure if it's a critique or a vision, or both. You be the judge. The dance of politics. Honeybees, upon return from scouting missions, engage in competitive waggle dances to sway the swarm toward one new hive location or another. As if senators cut loose in the aisles, breakdancing their entreaties to one another, battling, floor rocking, freezing, locking, popping, whacking. This goes on for days, till the bee scouts, of which there are hundreds, either drop from contention or switch allegiance by adopting the hive, by adopting, the other factions' dance moves. If lucky, once consensus is reached, the hive makes new honey, bathing themselves in sticky pleasure in liquid gold. Thank you.
And next up is Julia Chiappella speaking of hives from the Hive Poetry Collective in Santa Cruz. So this is the poem that I wrote at 2 a.m. in the morning.
called To Eat the Insane Root. After Lady Macbeth, November 6th, 2024. Oh, lady, in a country of many, you work round the promised fire, consumptive. Tell your name, your desire. See you, your certainty. Long white dress trailing in suds left from all that washing. It's clear those hands will never be clean. Oh, lady. You are soaked in red, 1,000 times down the halls, countless times in the dark. You have wound those hands through hair, through water, working, working for his bright ring. Because he spoke and you followed, because all else was uncertainty, because you wore terror like a halo. Oh, lady, when he carves his initials in your wrist, when the tides rise, take your children, and sky's sorrow fills the mouth with gray ash, your appetite will erase future's gleam. And what you knew of duty's crushing gift, the one you knelt to in surrender, in vanity, will rise in the wide prophet of his dagger smile. And the last one I just decided to read today, this one has not been published, and I've been working on it, and decided to read it in following up to Brenda Hillman, Roger Reeves, and Kazim Ali's wonderful panel this afternoon on capaciousness in poetry. This is called Sun, S-O-N. I gotta make it big enough. 500 trillion times brighter than our near star. Each year, the black hole eats 370 solar masses. This is hard to imagine. Harder still to think its light took 12 billion years to reach us. So what we see is as it was when the 13.8 billion year old universe was only 2 billion years old. Thinking in time swung round an eternity like this is more than a watershed, carries more praise than simple sun drawn on butcher paper by the 7-year-old next door. Something that will last and last down a few small years, tucked in a folder, filed in a box, carried from house to house, errant bit of one-time boy who'll grow to throw his seed, thwart his own desire, and burn with threats so hot they will, for a while, devour every sweet word and fragrance. But premonition's shudder is a tick of nerves. Far into the future, light years from now, the light he casts from that bright sun will burn, bright as something that once was, bright as what is no more. Thank you. Reading, Julian, thank you. And next up, and I just realized, thank you, Rodrigo. He's got so many readings he's got. Next up is Suzanne Dykman, and I realized after I promised I'm going to say where everyone's from, I don't really know where everyone's from, but it's somewhere in the East Bay, so you can just like kind of tweak that for me. Okay, come on up, Suzanne, let everyone know whatever you want them to know. Yeah. Give it up for Suzanne.
So I tend to just say, you say. I'd like to thank everyone for this. My answer. Thank everyone for being here, and I'm very pleased to be part of this anthology. Words have power, and I'm going to start with a poem that's not in the anthology, but was one place where I first realized the power of words, and that was as a child being taken to Mass, Catholic Mass, which at that time was in Latin. And I thought, well, this is really powerful. I don't know what it means, but it's good. So I wrote a poem based using the English translation, based on the Mass. It's called Mercy. As it was, it is. As it is prepared for, it was and is protection. Misery means my mercy. Thoughts enter my right side, holding to one part of me. Believe in waiting, wait begging, beg wondrous, humble fragrance, that innocence be fire and incense. When the unspoken intercedes, a secret is to remember your name and your name. I confess to seraphs, the word I strike is bread, is servant, is forever. I strike Mary, Mary, May, Ma, three times with my most hand, as worthy attention, gracious, and pleasing in every way. Said kindly, here, reading from the end, this is the beginning. Wash, wash, wash. Alleluia. Though alleluia you may omit. I kneel. Again, I say cleave, then accordingly. I kneel, so I am kneeling to memory as sung and known. The reverend tongue has no nature, but I saw and white of snow. I kneel, I say, inaudible. And the poem in the anthology that I'm going to read is titled Earthquakes, and it was relevant. I wrote this initially in the first term about the border. It's still happening, and it's also happening now with children who have been taken into Russia against their will, kidnapped, basically. So we have a lot of children to worry about. Earthquakes. When one child is taken, when all the children are taken away, when you must have the child, when the child's belly is empty, when your belly empties of child, when the trees continue to grow, so many shades of green, when morning birds sing their songs, I know none of them. When childhood left, when the heart is split, I want the hammer. I am the hammer that breaks the bars. As the earth opens a crack to the gathered steam, untenable pocket of heat. As water rolls over the body, leaving salt on skin. As I write today's date, as I wrote the date when the child was taken, it is molten. The hammer is small. I swing my arm, aim beyond my hand. I keep swinging. When the children are taken, when the hammer sings the songs of unidentified birds, childhood broken, when childhoods are ripped away, when blood is stirred from the fissure seeps. The hammer hits my nail. The bruise is not a hue of memory. The hammer strikes rock, hopes for a crystal center. When the children are returned, when the child will never come back, when the fissure will not close. As I walk around it, as we talk around it, the egg that has split, the baby that is made, the child we hold, the dimpled hand.
Beautiful, Suzanne, that was lovely. All right, so next up, we have J.P. Howard, to whom I want to issue an official apology because it was really difficult for people to, for the cabbies apparently, to find their way here. I'm so sorry. There was a little map on the QR code, but apparently it was insufficient, and I feel lost every time I come to L.A., but I'm sorry that you had that experience coming up. And we're so happy that you're here. Are you from New York,
J.P.? I am excited to climb up here.
Oh, you did. Oh, that's so stressful. Give it up for J.P.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul. Thank you to all the editors. What a powerful collection. I'm really honored to be in it, and it's just such a pleasure and so moving to hear the poems being read tonight. I also, as a small press, as Paul mentioned, I also want to thank Carbonation Press and the editors. I'm just amazed how quickly you guys got this out. That's really a feat. I know what goes into it. So I'm actually going to read, as somebody who's edited a couple anthologies, I'm going to read a couple poems, one of my own and then one another poem from the anthology, because I think it's just nice to hear more voices. My poem, I submitted two poems, and the one that was taken was the one that I wrote on election day, before we knew the results. So, and I just started it. I was actually kind of on a writing retreat. I started it just by looking out my window, which is sort of my morning practice, how I get started. And I know that I felt a great weight that day, I'm sure, as we all did. And so, of course, the election came into the poem. On this election day, I elect the soft rain. I elect the Japanese maple scarlet shawl. I elect the bright blades of straw mounded around the fig. I elect the kingfisher swooping to spear the bright fish. I elect the red-tailed hawk soaring over fields gone fallow. I elect the possum swaying side to side like a wet mop. I elect the crows, their knowing commentary. I elect the mushrooms punching through dark loam like a fist ready to revolt. I elect the stellar jay taking charge at the feeder. I elect the hummingbird vanishing into an infinite sky. I elect the oh-so-democratic crabgrass. I elect the Himalayan blackberry vines taking over the hillside. I elect the salals lit with rain, the Douglas fir sighing with wind, the big leaf maple, her generous catcher's mitt leaves and ample arms. I elect our neighbors growing food for the food bank. I elect those lined up outside waiting to fill their bags. I elect the vote sitters, vote greeters, vote thankers, vote getter outers, all who believe in one voice, one vote. I elect those who've been silent, their votes suppressed, bank accounts closed, homes shuttered, abandoned, flooded, fled. I elect those who've waded up to their knees to feed their animals, who've scrambled onto rooftops to await a helicopter carrying their cats and dogs. I elect the voter who grabbed her ballot as she evacuated her home, flames licking at her heels. On this election day, with so much at stake, I elect us all. Thank you. I think we all knew how much was at stake, and that it's nice, you know how it is as a poet, when what you need to hear comes out in your poem. So the one that I chose to read, there's so many powerful poems in this collection, but I'm going to read the one by Alicia Hokanson, because she's a friend, a fellow poet from the Northwest. And I just like the message in this. It's called In a Blue State. After the campaign, the multiple despairs, the rift down the middle of the map, angry polemics on the Facebook page, free-floating anxiety and its sleepless nights. I read in today's paper that psychologists counsel self-care. Try laughter, a long walk, a return to your art. Gather friends, play music, and turn off your devices. Find your way back to living the local wonders. Autumn is still fanning gold flames in the gardens. Waxwings swerve and swoop before us, drunk on the abundance of the rowan's red berries. We step through the rain onto the bright paths of maple and birch, spreading rust and scarlet across the neighborhood street. The bookstore fills the small white space with poets and their friends, a transforming music. And after, were the poets too sad, she asks. I say the world is too sad, but you still need to tell it. As Emily, on her journey, left small packets tied with ribbon, and the lichens you studied in their chemical revolution sometimes take centuries to break the granite. Thank you.
I get more out of that poem every time I hear it or see it. Thanks, Holly. Robert Lashley was one of our co-editors. Oh, how eloquent he was when we were having these deliberations. Someone said that ought to be a book, your responses to these poems. Robert had a death in the family, so please keep him in your thoughts. We hope to see him in Santa Cruz. That's his plan. Also, Dana Teen Lomax was going to read and is not feeling well, so she had to pull out. However, we have someone in her stead to read a poem from the anthology. Please welcome Jill Stengel.
Because I love him. This poem is called Dear Idris, Drama 1, Bloom's Geometry. Idris, sometimes the mood lingers like fingerprints, like it's a caring place, a song at the edge of your teeth, and I don't want it to feel like home. This in-between state of react but live. Every day we're asked to conjure breath, avoid ego and melancholy, and do self-care. Avoid thorns on discount roses. Stay clear of dreams that come too fast and linger. Act like our hearts aren't a lemon half squeezed, and cars aren't on fire. And don't forget the hustle by way of Republican bootstraps. If my skin could speak, it would be an alto and use the word gobsmacked and probably mofo. And yes, these are grown folk blues, far from star prints, double-leg shadows, and carrion birds. So this next poem I wrote, I think when times are hard, it's hard to find love, it's hard to find joy. So I wrote a poem about how to find joy when it's lost. Instructions. How to find joy when lost. Things you'll need. Your third eye. One pair of flared yoga pants that grazes the ankle. If you're a water sign, salt and vinegar chips. If you're an earth sign, honey roasted peanuts. A fascination with stars. Discarded bubble wrap. A picture of a Peanuts character. Breath. Seltzer water. Reliable memories, a reflective surface, your wash day bra if applicable. One song to flood the soul, one song to call our arms. Eye of a tiger is not allowed. One baby picture, two dark chocolate squares. First, take your temperature. Are you running hot as a minotaur? If so, pull out the salsa water, drink and dab on your wrist. Know that there is joy in the water you come from, the water you swallow. Open your third eye. When was the last time you looked at the moon? A month ago? A year? Eat a honey roasted peanut or vinegar chip. Imagine the moon has a neck that bends. Give it a different name, a name of a childhood friend or character. When was the last time you whistled, where the wind asked a question? Pull up that memory with pants and bra that makes you feel like a would-be conqueror. Practice walking down hallways. Say your full name out loud, like an announcer from above. If you have a long unbuttoned shirt, peacoat or duster that can billow behind, great. Leave sparks in your wake and in every reflective surface. Pull up song one or two. Sing the chorus, but feel free to make up or mumble the verses. If an imagined audience is needed, pop the bubble wrap for sound. You are pulling something out of yourself and making room for what comes next. If you're a mother or grandmother, there's wondrous meat in the world that came from your body. If you have breath, you're connected to all things. Now, pull a picture of your baby self and some chocolate. Tell him or her that when they discovered language, they discovered a whole universe and system of smiles. Now, how do you feel?